Okay. Hey, Matthew.
There's very little prep.
Very little prep here. I have not even seen anything. I have Matthew's
notes in my
hand. I
literally just walked in the room.
He just walked right in, and we're like, "Okay, we're doing this because we're running behind. You got a meeting in a little more than an hour." So, Matthew.
Yes, sir.
I was shocked and appalled.
Oh boy.
No, just kidding. I wasn't. Hey, so how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Yeah. That's yeah. Good. We were just lamenting that nobody emailed us about Carrot.
No, I know. I had one person talk to me. I'm trying to remember who this was. Someone talked to me and said, "Hey, did you guys ever mention Carrot?" And I'm like, "Yeah, we did. Matthew brought up the smoothie thing." You're like, "What do you like in your smoothie?
What do you like in your smoothie?"
Yeah, which felt carrot. Like a little bit of a that was a little bit of a lob, like a real, you know, like a.
and I even said a certain amount of beta carotene.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Which was I thought that was actually quite an interesting, nice little twist on
that. Was like a hint that yes, the word had just been spoken.
The word, yeah, exactly.
And not a single person emailed us.
Not a single person, but I had one conversation. So I feel like it is catching on. It just might take a little longer.
Maybe only one person listens to this podcast.
Exactly. People play for, 10 seconds and then they're out.
Maybe we should tell people if this is their first podcast they're listening to what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So we do have a special word that we try to kind of drop in, or two words, whatever.
And it's
we
a game.
It's a game. Yeah. We try to drop it into the conversation. And if you catch when we say that word or words, and
when
you
email
us,
drop
it like it's hot. If you email me or Matthew,
yes,
basically whoever emails first gets a prize of some sort. Yeah, it's kind of fun. so this week's word, it's actually two words though. Tom Cruise. Yeah.
Tom Cruise.
Have you seen the new Top Gun?
Wait, are we starting?
Starting what? Oh, okay. Sorry.
Game?
No, I was actually curious if you've seen the new Maverick.
Yes, yes.
Did you like it?
I thought it was awesome.
Oh, it's so awesome. So I was like, this. It really is kind of a perfect feel-good movie. And it's very American. It's very like, yes. if you're like, I feel like I loved it. And if I was like American, I'd be like, oh man.
I felt like they did like some kind of mathematical study of like the every perfect thing so, that you needed in a movie.
Totally.
And then they
exactly,
put it in and it was like, this
exactly,
is it.
Exactly, yes, I know. And Tom Cruise looks great, doesn't he?
Okay, but. Let's just say Tom Cruise for later in the podcast.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Because you just said the word.
Yeah, see, I didn't even, I know.
Doesn't count now.
Okay.
It counts after we're done the topic.
Yeah, after we're done the topics. But doesn't he? He does look great though, right? For his age, he's like,
yeah.
I think he's almost 60, isn't he?
No, I think he is 60, isn't he?
Is he 60? Oh, and he looks, I'm like, man. And I have trouble working out 10 minutes like three times a week.
100%.
Seriously. By the way, you guys, Matthew gave me, sent me something that he doesn't use ever, apparently. But it's a, it's this YouTube, it's this workout thing that you can do. It's a 20-minute workout.
Yes.
And it doesn't require any weights or any gear at all.
It just requires
personal
energy and discipline.
Not energy, just discipline. But I have been doing, I've been trying to do it three or four times a week, but I just do 10 minutes, not the whole 20 minutes.
Oh,
that's
well,
all
good
I can
for you.
Do. Well, it's 10 minutes. It's not great, but it's something. It
Man,
is something.
You'll be looking like Tom Cruise.
I'm already starting to look kind of look
Wait,
like
still it. Doesn't count.
Oh, it doesn't? Yeah, see, so you can't. Okay, all right, okay. This whole thing. Failed.
All right, anyway.
Okay, yeah, sorry. Matthew, I heard through the grapevine that you have more good news stories to share with us.
I sure do.
Oh, man, you got to tell us. Let's
Thanks
hear
for
it.
Asking.
Yeah, totally.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have two stories for you. Story number one, on October 10th, animal rescuers in Boston came to the aid of a kitten found wandering the city streets with a glass bowl or jar stuck over her head.
Can I just say, you know, the problem with these stories, Matthew, is that you are not an animal lover. I'm okay. Like, this is the actual sad, that's a very
no,
sad
it's
story.
Good news. But just wait for it.
But you're laughing. So you think it's funny that this is the news. And I'm like, this is good news. Okay, go ahead.
Well, guess who came to the rescue of the kitten?
Tell me.
The Animal Rescue League of Boston.
Okay, that's good.
That's a thing.
Yep.
Anyway, they saw the kitten wandering in the Danforth Street area with a round glass object stuck over its head. And the field agents arrived to find the female kitten wandering a roadway. So that's dangerous.
Ooh, yeah.
The agents were able to remove the glass object and took the kitten ARL's denim animal care. Okay, I don't even know what that means. Anyway, went for further treatment.
Right, yeah.
The kitten, dubbed Buzz Lightyear,
I like that,
after the spaceman from the Toy Story franchise, yeah, was found to be in good health at the shelter and is being socialized to make her more comfortable around humans.
This is actually Matt, this
I should
is
just
good
see
news.
The picture online.
Aww.
It's this little kitten that's just like looking through their literally looks like a space.
Yeah,
a
yeah,
space
yeah, yeah. Don't like a
woman,
yeah, like an old
girl?
Fashioned yeah, when they have the big,
yes,
the big bubble around their
the
head.
The big bubble,
yeah,
around,
yeah,
their
totally
head.
Aw, that's a good news story.
I bet it was going for like a goldfish. And it just, yeah, just stuck its head
it's
in
like,
there.
Oh, shoot. It's like, crap.
Anyway, the kitten's free.
The kitten is free. That is good. That is good news, actually. I like those stories. I actually literally do.
Yeah. And yeah, that's October 10th.
And I know some
like,
people,
what is today?
What's that?
What is today?
Today is the 11th. It's a
this Tuesday. Was yesterday.
Yesterday. Wow. So that's like, this is like breaking news.
Breaking news.
Yeah. That's amazing. What I like about it is that I know some people are skeptical. And they're like, yeah, but what about kids that are starving? You know, why do you, and I'm like, we can care about both things.
Right. You went up to the kid and you're like, just a second, I cannot help you right now. There's some kids that are starving.
Can you give me 20? Give me 20 minutes. No. I'm always like, I always feel like we can just be like, hey, it's okay to care about many different things at the same time.
Yes.
What a novel idea. Any more good news, Matthew?
Oh, yeah. And the second one also involves an animal.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yesterday, visitors to an In-N-Out Burger fast food restaurant in Las Vegas were treated to an unusual scene when a man brought his camel through the drive-thru to enjoy some fries. In a video filmed outside the eatery, which I have seen, Corey.
Yeah.
I've seen this video. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Shows a dromedary camel named Fergie walking through the drive-thru lane with her handler, Brandon Nobles. Nobles told onlookers that Fergie's a 14-year-old camel who was rescued from her former home in Colorado. The video shows Nobles taking Fergie through the drive-thru to get French fries. She loves the French fries, Nobles says, as Fergie feasts. Fergie now lives on Nobles' farm and has paid visits to numerous local businesses. Paid visits to numerous local businesses.
Right, yeah.
Nobles' Instagram account, which you can follow, features photos and videos showing Fergie visiting other restaurants, including Wendy's and Einstein Brothers Bagels.
That's hilarious.
You should honestly, it'll make your day.
Really?
It'll be good news if you watch this camel go through the In-N-Out.
So this is on, you can find this on his, on Nobles, what's his first name? Brandon Nobles Instagram account.
I guess so.
And maybe it'll be, okay, or there's another video. Okay.
I just saw it online. So funny.
I love it. Yeah, exactly. And paid, yeah, there, he's clearly, he's got a little thing going there, right?
That's right.
Entrepreneurial.
The lady in the drive-thru, she was just dying laughing. There's
oh, really?
Head of a camel
so
right
great.
There in her.
And Fergie actually likes the fries.
Yeah,
that's
loves
so
the
awesome.
Fries.
I love it. I love it.
All right.
Wonderful. Okay.
That's it.
Guys, I think we all feel a little better. Thank you, Matthew.
Yeah.
That was wonderful.
The camel has fries and Buzz Lightyear has been set free.
Exactly.
Okay. So we're in the Jesus Revolution.
Yep.
And, you know, always want to give a little summary in case this is somebody's first time to listen into the podcast. So we're doing 7 weeks on seven topics. The seven topics are equality, compassion, consent, enlightenment, science, freedom, and progress. Mm-hmm. And every week we've said that these are seven great ideas, great values, but we're not sure where they come from, or I'm not sure most Canadians realize where they come from. Mm. And we're making the argument based on a book I read called The Air We Breathe by Glenn Scrivener, that they come from the Jesus Revolution, that a lot of these ideas aren't found in the Roman Empire and they're not really found in the natural world around us, but that they come to us from the Jesus Revolution. So the last couple of weeks, we've done equality and compassion. And then this week, I preached a sermon on consent. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and just to summarize this week, if you weren't there on Sunday, was just the idea that this idea that we should have the freedom to freely give or withhold consent in a sexual relationship is kind of a core thing in our society. Like the Me Too movement has been crying out about the injustice of specifically men. Yes. There are cases of women, but mostly men who have taken advantage of women who have not given their consent, or where there was a power dynamic or whatever age.
Yeah.
A line was crossed when it comes to age, but that there's a lot of pain there in people's lives. And so, but why is it so common sense to us that someone should be able to freely give their consent? Hmm. And, you know, is it that it just truly is common sense? Or did we get that idea from somewhere? Was it passed on to us? And I think when you look historically, it's hard to find cultures where consent was normative, like the ability to freely give consent, due to actually what we actually find in history is, specifically with women, is a lot of like unhealthy ways in which women were not cared for. I was going to say the way in which women were cared for, but not cared for.
Right. Yeah.
And the assumption that men would have the rights to mm-hmm. Their wives' bodies mm-hmm. or the bodies of their children or slaves, like in the Roman Empire. But this has been a problem for much of history. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we get it from history. And then I was trying to make the point that you don't really see it in the animal kingdom. Right. Around us, that actually there's a lot of harassment that male animals have towards their female counterparts. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, so this idea of just being able to freely give consent, the ability for people to say no, like I don't want this, and for that to be honored. I guess if we were on like a detective and we're trying to figure out where does this come from? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it seems to come from Jesus and his ethic of love.
Right.
This idea of self-giving love. And so Jesus has like the golden rule, which is, so in everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. Mm-hmm. For this sums up the law and the prophets. And then I use the quote from St. Thomas Aquinas, which is, to love is to will the good of the other. That if you truly love someone, and in Christianity, we would want to exclusively talk about marriage, like sex within the confines of marriage.
Right,
but I'm acknowledging there's a lot of people that are part of the series that aren't Christians. And they're like, well, mm-hmm. in my context, I'm thinking outside of marriage.
Sure.
Right?
Like, yeah, totally.
And with my girlfriend or my partner or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so think about to love, that the ability that when we love, it's to will the good of the other. And that framework, which I think comes from Jesus, is actually really informing the world we're living in right now. And mm-hmm. I think it's a good thing. Like, yeah. I think like Jesus brought good news, and I think totally. This is good news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any thoughts?
Yeah. I I loved it. And I do, I know I've said this before too, but I do love this series. I love that it does point to good news, like the gospel and Jesus announced good news. And obviously we think about, often I think as Christians, we think immediately about the death and resurrection of Jesus, you know, as awesome, amazing, wonderful, world-changing news. And sometimes, you know, I think that we haven't focused on his teachings and actually his announcing of what the kingdom of God looks like. And so
right.
I love this because it's actually, like, oh, this is actually really great news. And I actually love, I noticed that your language I've often appreciated in this series, because I think, I like that you've said, like, you know, if you really love this idea, you might actually love Jesus, you know, or you might have like, you know, which I think is, I like that idea that say like, yeah, if you might be closer to Jesus than you think, if you don't currently, you know, if you wouldn't currently call yourself a Jesus follower, it could be that you're actually not that far off, you know?
Cool.
Well, I love that.
So full disclosure, I got that from Glenn Scrivener, right?
Oh yeah.
He actually says something interesting. He says, you already believe, because he said, the idea we have is that there's a bunch of believers in the world and there's a bunch of unbelievers.
Right, right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And he said that's not actually true because even those who, let's say, would say I'm agnostic or I'm an atheist or I'm okay with secularism or whatever, that they're already kind of, he calls it mid-air. They're already taking a leap of faith to trust things that can't be proven. Hmm. He makes a very provocative statement. He says, how can compassion or equality or consent be proven? Like, how can you prove these things? Hmm. He said, really, in many ways, they're a leap of faith. Like, they're you're choosing to believe that every person has dignity.
Yes.
You don't actually see that with your eyes. It's hard to put that in a test tube and, try to kind of quantify that.
Yeah.
That it actually, you're already placing your faith in the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah.
So I like
right.
that. It's like you're already midair. You're already trusting. You're risking.
I love that. I think anyway. That's so, and it rings true for me too. I think I've told you before, I've had conversations with friends who aren't Christians, and I have felt that way where I'm like, man, like I feel like you exemplify Jesus in a lot of ways, actually. Even though you wouldn't call yourself, not Matthew, you do too, Matthew, but my friend being like, hey, like even the fact that you really care about doing what's right and actually helping out I know that you care passionately about helping people that have less than you, for instance, you know? And it's like, I think that that actually is the heart of Jesus. Like you're, yeah, same idea, that you're actually closer than you might think.
Right.
And I think it's a bit of a provocative idea, especially totally. To old school kind of evangelical, you know, like kind of, it's not necessarily what we think, but I think it's beautiful. It makes a lot of sense. I really loved, and maybe you'll get to this so you can tell me, because I haven't looked at your notes yet. Sorry, I was going to say I really appreciated the conversation around how Christianity has maybe not always done, or the church hasn't always done a good job of teaching about sexuality within marriage, like for guys and girls, right? And you talked a lot about that. I thought that was great. And I wondered if you'd get any pushback. Have you gotten any pushback?
That's coming up.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I was like, that is awesome. And I have not a lot to say. I just mean like, I feel like I've felt that way for a long time where I'm like, this feels unrealistic and not healthy or helpful. So I love that you dug into that. That was great.
Okay. Yeah. Hopefully we'll have a cool discussion about it.
Yep.
Just a couple white males. Chatting about this stuff.
just solving the world, one conversation at a time.
We were thinking, you know, Corey and I were thinking, how could we do this in a really well-rounded way?
Let's
just the two of us.
Just the two. It makes the most sense. I think it's what people want to hear. Exactly. In our air-conditioned office, just living the dream.
Both in our 40s, both with beards. Both grew up in great Christian homes. We're very, totally. very diverse.
Very in touch with, exactly. That's what makes this special.
Okay, so the first thing I was going to say was, it was really interesting when I started off with the image of Baby It's Cold Outside.
Right.
That song.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, those of you who are listening to this podcast, if you could just donate WD-40, Corey's chair is so loud.
I'm just trying to get comfortable. All right, here we go. Come on. There we go. Good.
No, so John Legend wrote new lyrics to Baby It's Cold Outside. And I didn't know how I felt about it. Cause when I was sharing it on Sunday, I was like thinking about the song. And it was funny because I had said, oh, maybe we should do this song for Making Spirits Bright.
Yeah.
And you were the one that you're like, wasn't that song canceled?
Didn't we cancel that song?
And then I was like, oh, right.
But it's such a great, I know.
Yeah. And and in the tune and the melody and that scene from Elf is so funny. But I was like, when I was thinking about this sermon, it worked perfect that we had had that conversation. Cause I was like, right, Baby It's Cold Outside is all about consent.
So
it turns out that a few years ago, John Legend, I think he did a duet with, what is her name?
I don't know.
She's a singer. She has Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, it was
Whoa. Good guess.
Yeah. I just know these things. Yeah.
So that he actually changed the lyrics.
Right. Yeah.
To try to make it a more Me Too sensitive song. So I'll just read some of them to you. So the girl says, I ought to say no, 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 sir, which is the original lyric.
Yeah.
But then he says, then you really ought to go, go, go. Hmm. Like she says, I ought to say no, no, no. And he says, well, then you should really go, go, go.
Right,
like he's actually being like a good guy.
Yes.
Like he's like, well, then go home.
Yeah.
If you don't want to be here, go home.
Version of it. Yeah.
And then she says, at least I'm going to say that I tried. And then he says, well, Murray, he just pulled up outside. And just the context is Murray is the cab driver.
Right.
He's called a cab driver for her to come pick her up.
Right. Yeah, right? Nice.
Because in the original song, the guy thinks that
there's no cab.
She says, I really can't stay. And he says, I understand, baby.
Right, yeah.
And then she says, baby, it's cold outside. I simply should go. And then he says, text me when you get home.
Great.
When I was reading that, I was like, I was like, okay, did that just ruin this song? Or, to my point, did the song ruin itself? And this is a fun way of getting it back.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
Thoughts, Corey?
I know. I think I told you this. All I've heard, I haven't heard a ton about this version, but I think when I have, I've heard negative reviews about it. Like being like, oh, it's kind of lame. It's kind of, you know, I guess you're not supposed to say lame anymore, actually. It's kind of dumb. It's kind of didn't really work very well or something. So, but I don't think I've actually heard it. I like John Legend. He's got quite an interesting background. I think he grew up in a Christian home, Christian environment and stuff. But anyways, I don't know where he's at now. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like with a song like this, it's kind of a unique scenario. Like there, especially this song, which feels so blatantly, it goes against consent, especially in like the Me Too movement, you know? So I feel like normally I would be like, it's kind of weird if you're rewriting lyrics to songs, you know, like I know that if funny, cause Brett, my friend Brett, who works with us, he's like, Corey, you do that all the time. I don't do it all the time, but I once in a while will change a lyric or two in our worship songs.
Yes. Worshippers, watch out.
Yeah, I'm just
you
saying.
You might be just having your eyes, you have your eyes closed, you have no and you idea. Just belt out a yeah, word, and it's not what,
exactly.
not what everyone else is singing.
Big conspiracy. I know. I just once when I'm like, oh, the song is so great, except for that one line. Like, why did they put that one line? You know, and it's like, whether it's theological or whether it's just clunky and kind of weird. So,
sure.
So I have taken liberty that way. But I know, like, normally, especially changing, like, an entire song, it feels like, you know, you kind of wouldn't want to do that. I'm curious to know about copyright stuff. Like, I wonder how that all works with the original and all that. You know, if it, obviously, he would have got permission to do it all. But, yeah, I don't know.
You're wondering who gets the money for it? Is this really your takeaway?
Exactly. Like, John Legend doesn't need the money, clearly. He's got to be fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like the song because it's a playful call and response. So yeah, I'm like, if this is a better alternative,
totally
I'm
true.
Like, well, let's just sing this song because I like the melody of it and I like the call and response.
Totally. It is fun. Yeah, it's super. I know. And it is nice to have a redeemed version of it or something.
Yeah.
But I just remember that scene in Elf was just so funny.
Oh, I know.
So great.
Okay. So I had a couple of people point out in a really good way. They just said, is consent really in the air we breathe? Was their question. Like equality and compassion felt like, yeah, we all agree.
Yeah.
Equality and compassion, mm-hmm. like, I mean, unless you're a total jerk, you know.
Yeah.
But consent, I guess their experience was like, I don't know if we're all on the same page here. I mean, that's why we've had the Me Too movement. That's why there's such, you know, so many horrible stories coming out. So one of my friends said this. They just said, I just can't agree that the notion of consent is obvious. It clearly isn't to so many people. But that's why the question, is it safe to say no to you, is so important for every ordinary person to ask themselves so they don't make consent into a playful game and become yet another abuser, even unintentionally. So I think their point was just like the song, Baby It's Cold Outside, maybe somebody has been like given a script or something, like not a script, but a way in which you date or show your affection.
Yeah.
And they've been told, oh no, like, you know, I'm just generalizing here, but like the girl will say no, but really her no means a yes.
So totally.
This person was saying, I can see how equality and compassion are in the air we breathe. I'm not so sure about consent. I'm not sure it's in the air we breathe. I think it's something we all need to learn.
Yes.
Which I thought, oh, that's interesting. I think I was thinking, oh, maybe intellectually everyone believes it.
Right.
Like everyone's just like, oh yeah, consent. But she's saying no. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. Like, I don't know. I feel like we like, most of us like the principle, like the idea of it, like the principle of consent, like at least in general terms. Well, obviously you wouldn't want to, like, I think the problem with consent is that I think once you start having the conversation, you realize how there's a lot of nuance there. Like, because it's one thing to say, hey, if there's advances that are happening and let's say, you know, the woman says no,
right,
and the guy continues to pressure and, you know, whatever, like, and it ends up in, you know, sex or whatever.
Yes.
I think we most, if not all of us would say that is wrong. Like if she said very clearly no. But of course, even as you're pointing out, like often it's not nearly as black and white as that, right? So then it's like, I can imagine people saying, oh, well, that doesn't necessarily sound as much like, you know, like there was no consent, because even the song like Baby It's Cold Outside,
right?
It's way more, it's nuanced, even though as you read it off the page, you're like, oh, actually, this is totally, like she's clearly saying no, no, no. But I think it's, and then power dynamics, you put power dynamics in there, that makes a huge difference. Like there's terrible, and I know it's a sensitive topic, and so even as I'm talking, I'm like, oh yeah, you have to be careful how you speak about these things as well. But even there was that terrible recently, the hockey players. There were some hockey players, like Canadian.
Oh yeah.
And there was like this
junior
team, and even that whole thing, right, was kind of like, I think it's still in court, or is it they're still going through?
Well, I thought Hockey Canada. The problem is they did payouts for these non-disclosure agreements.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why they're under fire right now.
Right.
Head of the board just, you know, stepped down.
Yep. Right. That's right. So I think that's what maybe it's like we think maybe. Maybe your friend is right, and maybe it's like we all think that we totally agree with it, but then when you actually get into the nitty gritty, you could suddenly be. And I think, unfortunately, I think probably even, again, this comes later, but in maybe in more, like sometimes in Christian homes, like the way that you are raised, like you might have assumptions built in as to how sex is supposed to work.
Exactly.
You know, and then that actually drifts into this area as well. So I know we're going to talk more about that, but yeah.
Well, totally. I do agree with her too, because the more I thought about it, I thought, oh no, I think it is obvious, but then I don't think it's obvious because like the image of the founding fathers a couple weeks ago of America saying all men are created equal and they own slaves.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And it's like you say something verbally, but you're not even sure. You actually don't know. You actually don't believe that.
Right. Yes.
So enough. I think in consent, it's like, sure, you should have the freedom to say no. But how you're actually living your life, it's clear you don't.
Yeah.
You don't know what that means.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. That this. Yeah. It makes sense. I think it's a good point.
So, yeah. Anyway. So, so thanks for that insight to my friend there. That's really good. Okay. So I want to read 1 Corinthians 7. It's really interesting. So only, I think, two people pointed out that I didn't include 1 Corinthians 7 in the sermon. Because the funny thing is 1 Corinthians 7 is actually about consent. So it's kind of like, Matthew, like the one Bible verse that could have like helped you in your sermon.
Yeah, yeah.
You
didn't use.
And there's a reason I didn't use it, but I want to just read it really quick.
Okay.
And I want to just point out a few things.
Okay.
So Paul says this. Now, for the matters you wrote about, quote, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman, end quote. So I just want to pause. Paul's addressing some, I think the Corinthian church wrote him a letter, right?
Okay.
It says, now for the matters you wrote about. So here's one of the things that they were wondering about. Is it good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman? The church in Corinth thinks that that's good.
Right.
For men and women not to have sex.
Yes.
And just so you know, the background could be, I know this is deep stuff here, but like Gnostic teaching, the idea of the body being kind of corrupt, only the soul is good.
Yeah.
And so the idea of moving away from sexual relationships, that could be an option there. Mm. And so like they're walking away from sex in the church. And you could say, oh, is that a good idea? Is that good or bad?
Right, right.
And so Paul is going to talk about the goodness of sex in a marriage context,
okay,
and the goodness of the body too. So he says this, but since sexual morality is occurring, each man should have sexual relations with his own wife and each woman with her own husband. The husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields it to her husband. In the same way, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but yields it to his wife. Do not deprive each other except perhaps by mutual consent and for a time so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. I say this as a concession, not as a command. I wish that all of you were as I am, but each of you has your own gift from God. One has this gift, another has that.
Hmm.
Okay, so it's really an interesting passage, but I want to point out a couple things.
Okay.
First of all, this passage is countercultural. Super countercultural.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because in a Roman society, a man had total authority over his wife, children, and slaves. He could do whatever he wanted sexually with his wife, children, and slaves.
Right.
Then he had an unquestioned access to prostitution outside the home.
Hmm.
So as people started becoming Christians, they entered into this church where it was one man, one woman, that were devoted to each other sexually. Mm. And listen to this. He says, the wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields it to her husband. And right here, everyone in Rome would be like, uh-huh, yes, we know.
Right. Yes, totally.
The wife belongs to the husband.
Yeah.
But then he says this, in the same way, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but yields it to his wife. That right there would have made the stock market crash in Rome.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
like just boom.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like that is so countercultural, but we don't see it that way.
Hmm.
When we read it, we read it and we're like, wait, their bodies belong to each other? This is so repressive.
Yes, right.
But I don't think we appreciate Paul's context.
Hmm.
When any husband would have learned that, it would have been the end of their sexual freedom.
Hmm. Hmm.
The idea that the husband doesn't have authority over his own body? Are you kidding me? So first of all, I just I think we have to step back into Paul's day and realize this is countercultural.
Yeah.
The other thing to point out is that there is mutual consent. This is mutual consent here. So look, verse 5 says, do not deprive each other except perhaps by mutual consent and for a time so that you may devote yourselves to prayer, then come together again. What's not written there, and which you could assume from Jesus and from Christian love in general, is that this whatever's going on here requires good communication. So the husband and wife are spending some time apart for prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, already that assumes you don't need to be having sex all the time. There can be seasons where that, you know.
Sure. Yep. Totally.
So, and then by mutual consent, you come back together. And it seems very prayerful. And it seems like, I think the assumption here is there's good communication, right?
Right.
And because I want to say this in a second is I don't want this to, this shouldn't be weaponized in a marriage.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And that's my fear when using Paul. That's why actually I didn't use this passage on Sunday is how this passage has been weaponized in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, we should come together. Hey, this is long enough. Now it's time to come together.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, totally.
So I also want to point out, look at verse 6. It's not a command. Verse 6 says, I say this as a concession, not as a command.
Right.
Whoa. How do we read the Bible here? That's interesting.
Totally. Yeah.
Paul's saying, no, this isn't a command.
Right.
I'm saying this as a concession to you.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting.
You know, you're saying some people in the church at Corinth don't even want to have sex with each other.
Right.
Right? So no matter where you're at, I'm just saying it's not a command, but everything I'm telling you is just some wisdom. And then he says in verse 7, he says, I wish you were single. I wish you were all the way I am.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So that the idea of living single and not having sex is a good option, right?
Right. Yep.
So I feel like what Paul's doing here is he's giving a countercultural message and one that assumes good communication and love and consent. He assumes consent here. And my fear is that this kind of thing can be weaponized.
Yes.
So we say, hey, listen, your body belongs to me, and it's been long enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's my fear.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Anyway, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I think it's a legitimate fear. I think because that combined with a complementarian understanding in marriage, right, which many, many Christians believe in, that man is the head of the home, right? Mm-hmm. Other teachings in Paul, which I know we're diving into that in January, I think, right? That conversation. But I think that I feel as though, especially with a passage like this in combination with that belief where it's like, no, I'm the head of the home. And now that can mean all sorts of different things, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be this terribly unhealthy thing. But it can be. It actually can be totally taken as I'm the boss, actually. And I think especially in, as you, again, not to keep coming back to the, in Christian circles with sexuality, where it's like, no, you can't, like, you should not be depriving me, right? Where I can totally see how this could easily, and I'm sure has been weaponized today, unfortunately.
Yeah. And can I say, even in a complementarian, and I know you just mentioned this, but even in a complementarian marriage, you should read loving your wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So if you're giving yourself up for your wife, that implies good communication and self-sacrifice.
Totally.
So even if you think you're the head of the home, you have to live that out as Christ loved the church.
Yes.
And not make an assumption about what you think headship means.
Right.
You know.
Right. But this, of course, is this is the problem.
Right.
Is it, I totally agree with
sure.
you. It's just that it's many people would not. I missed that part, you know?
Right.
Like, I just read the part about me getting to be the head. So, you know,
right. yeah.
But
yeah.
no, yeah, that's interesting.
Well, let's take it to where you were actually hoping to go. So the next thing is that I got some pushback and it was really actually helpful. Somebody wrote me and actually kind of gave me a window into how they heard my sermon.
Mm-hmm.
So they would say that the spirit of the sermon suggested that sex, when we don't feel like it, is always wrong. That I was saying that, you know, that you really shouldn't be having sex with your spouse unless, you know, you were really wanted to or blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they said, no, like sometimes you should have sex with your spouse, and this is their language, like a chore. Sometimes we do things we don't like, for the good of the other. Mm-hmm. So we fulfill an obligation to our spouse that is helpful. And so they use the word chore and obligation. So I'm just using those intentionally in their pushback that, hey, listen, this is an obligation we have to each other. It's a chore. And they said they use the example of like Bible reading. Mm. Like, listen, you don't always love to read your Bible. You know, it's the right thing to do. You wake up, you take part in it, even if you don't feel like it.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
So I actually spent a lot of time Monday, that was yesterday, thinking about this because I was like, huh, that's so interesting. Like I'm trying to run it through everything I had said on Sunday and the things that I had been learning. And so my response would be that I guess I would say simple enough, okay, I'm open to what they're saying. I'm open to this idea, but I have a lot of guardrails around it. So for instance, one would be, I would want to make sure that this spouse is able to say no and that their no is being honored.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
That's really, you know, like what I asked in the sermon is are you a safe person to say no to?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Okay. So first of all, is the no honored in that home? I would also hope that both spouses are walking in purity regardless of their, of what their sexual relationship looks like. Meaning if one spouse starts to put on the pressure of like, hey, you know, things are starting to be like really tempting for me with other women or porn, and I'd like us to have sex more often or whatever. Then the spouse starts to feel this pressure that like my, okay, my spouse's needs are not being met. I need to meet their needs. But I would want to say, I think your spouse's purity is not contingent on you necessarily.
Right. Yep.
Right.
Totally. Yep.
Okay. So as long as, so ability to say no, we're walking in purity no matter what. And finally, I'd say if you, even though you're not interested in sex, still want to have sex because you want to make your spouse happy.
Yep.
Right. If that's truly your free will
and
desired, then I would say that, okay, then I get that. That's fine. Like that's very kind. And, you know,
sure.
As long as this is something that you're consenting to, I mean, that's the hope, right? Without a culture of fear, like I hope there's no fear. And cause even I can imagine somebody still doing this and just being really afraid that their spouse is going to run off or something like that. Like there's just this culture of fear they have in their own heart. And I could be totally wrong.
Right.
Maybe this person has zero fear whatsoever.
Yeah.
And, or kind of lust management. Right?
Right.
Like I just need to manage my spouse's lust and I really want to be a helpful soldier. You know, all of that, I'm just like, oh, I guess I feel like with certain guardrails I could maybe come to see like this idea of like, hey, totally. I don't always love it. I mean, I don't know. I'm just picturing like I don't love buying gifts. I'm just like not great at it. But as soon as I start talking about other love languages, like, oh, I'm not a good listener, I don't like buying gifts, like, they're not like the physical touch. It feels like physical touch just carries so much weight. Do you know what I mean? Like, it seems like the stakes are way higher.
Yes.
I'm not trying to like get myself off the hook here for not buying Tanya a gift, but I'm saying like, if I like, oh, I'm going to buy her a gift, even if I don't feel like it, that's great.
Yeah,
you really should do that.
Yes,
you know,
we're gonna
go on a date even if I don't feel like it. We're going, you know, I'm gonna say I love you even though I'm not good at that. I mean, you know, my parents didn't. This is not true about my life, but I'm just making it up. Like my parents didn't say they loved me.
Yeah.
So, but I'm gonna intentionally remind my spouse that I love them. All those things are like I totally get it. But as soon as you start talking about having sex, I'm like, it just feels like there's more. I don't know.
Oh yeah.
More at stake here.
Oh, totally.
Right?
Yeah,
so,
of course. Yes.
So when this person started saying a chore and an obligation, I was like, I don't know.
I know, totally. I think, because I agree with you. Like, obviously, I feel like, and maybe this is common sense, I know we're not supposed to use that word anymore, but like, to some degree, I feel like, well, if you have a great, healthy, you know, reasonably healthy, no one's got a perfectly healthy marriage, but if you've got like a reasonably healthy marriage and there is decent communication, well, it's like, yeah, just, you know, you do you, kind of thing, you figure it out. And you, I think what I feel like when I hear that is that I've been at many, in many contexts where that is, it moves away from this sort of private kind of agreement that I have with my spouse together. This is kind of how we, you know, every marriage has its own dance. And it's like we've, sure. you know, it moves away from that into suddenly a teaching agenda thing, right? I've been under that teaching. And Sherry has too, where it's like, you know, like women, like you need to, like, when you show up at the door, you should have makeup on, you should like make sure that you're looking presentable, like all those kind of, oh yeah.
Actually?
For sure. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And oh yeah.
Tell
yeah.
me who and tell me where. What church was this? And name the pastor.
The podcast, I'm gonna tell you, yeah. Or just like, yeah, but that's the exact, to be honest, the exact kind of teaching that you're saying is not great, that's why I appreciate it very much. Like if you like you need to be make yourself available to your husband, because otherwise he, like, you know how men are. And it almost ends up being this sort of this Neanderthal vision of men. Like we're just sharks, you know, and if there's blood in the water, man, we just go crazy. You know, and it's like not all guys are like this. You know, it just feels like things have gotten in the church in particular exaggerated. And so I agree with you. I feel like at the same time, whoever this person was, like, of course, like if you have an agreement together and it's, and it feels like an actual freely, like where you feel totally free to say yes or no to something, then it's like, yeah, of course. If you feel like this is sort of self-giving, you know, this is a self-giving moment and I'm happy. Whether it's the guy or the girl, to be honest, it doesn't always have to be the female. You know, it's like we sort of think of that, but sometimes it might be the guy being like, you know, it's whatever, you know? And so that, yes, I'm the same as you. I get a little nervous because I think it can easily slip into that Christian guilt thing where it's like, no, ladies, you need to make sure that you're, you know, whatever, making yourself available to your husband or he's going to stray, which I think, I really think that's been taught a ton, whether it's been explicitly taught or more kind of like, you know, almost like the subtext of, you know, of a conversation or something.
Right.
And I think, it does, you and I have talked a lot about the church and I think, and even teachings on sex and stuff. I think there's a lot of work to do in the church. Like I remember even just not to go on tangent, but even just growing up, like the idea of like, you know, stay pure, stay pure, stay pure. Don't think about sex. Don't talk about sex. Don't, you know, and then, but as soon as you get married, it's like, now you go and you need to enjoy it. It's got to be, it should be awesome. If it's not awesome, there's something wrong. And what's wrong, you know, it's like, wow, like we're talking 24 hours difference here, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And I remember feeling that, being like, wow, it's like we've been told all along, this is like kind of a dirty, terrible thing unless you're married. And then it's, you know, it's like, this kind of falls into that category a little bit for me as well.
And it does seem like, it feels like there are couples that I've worked with that I've known that like that it's, sex is just such a painful topic.
And
there will be one spouse that just does not want to have sex, a lot of sex. And in many ways, they are already beating themselves up for that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like this is something that like one spouse needs to remind them, like, hey, you know, this is already something that's a big deal for them.
Absolutely.
Whether it's abuse in the past or just like not much desire, it's not really their love language or whatever.
Yep.
So then it's like, how can good communication, steady love, talking these things out, like, I don't know. It feels like rather than coming to 1 Corinthians 7 and saying, see, Paul says, you know, and it's just like, it doesn't feel like the 1 Corinthians 13, that love is patient and it's kind and it, you know, always protects and all of this.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway.
Yep. Keeps no record of wrongs. Totally. Yeah. It feels, and it's almost because it's not a commandment, right? So you can also look at this and say, this is, seems to be Paul's suggestion that there's a lot of wisdom here there can be a lot of wisdom here if we're looking at it the right way, but it's not, certainly not something to be, as you say, weaponized. So yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, with that, pushback in mind. I really do appreciate this person that they sent me that pushback, because I'm like, it's good for me to think about and really wrestle with. And okay. Hey, one of my friends texted me and he sent me a great text. He was texting me about the idea of consent as the start but not the goal. At the end of my sermon, I talked about, hey, consent is not like the pinnacle or the goal of Christian sexual ethics.
Right. Yes.
It should really just be like the starting line.
Right.
Right. Like this is like the basics. Right.
Right. Yeah. Don't pat yourself on the back too much if you're keeping that and that's kind of it, you know.
Right. We're consenting. It's like, okay, actually there's more.
Yeah.
And so he said this. I just want to read his text to me. He said, quote, "Maybe because I come from a carpentry background, I've often thought of marriage and social relationships sort of like building a house, consent being one of many sections of the building code. But as carpenters and creators, we must always remind ourselves that the building code is the minimum acceptable level and not necessarily the target of achievement. Mm. There's no point in building a house that doesn't meet code. But that said, who wants to live in a house whose pinnacle of development only meets the minimum acceptable standard?"
Yeah, right.
That's great. That's so good. I wish I had that on Sunday, because I was like, yeah, like I want to live in a house that meets the code.
Yep.
And feels comfy, cozy, looks great, like looks awesome, totally. You know? And I'm like, I would want our marriage to be one that like is one that it flourishes under God's blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
And so that consent is like, this is like permission to play. This is like basic. This is like 101. This is like consent is like, you shouldn't even have this relationship if this is not operative
right.
in your marriage.
Should be almost the ground that you're walking on in
the
a way.
The ground.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I like totally, that building image.
That's a great, well, it's funny because I think that there is, and again, I know we won't park here too long, but I think about like when it comes to sex, we have such a, I think the church, as we've talked about, you know, there's been whatever flaws in the ways that we've talked about it. But even in I think the culture also doesn't really know what to do with it either. Like, I think because we all acknowledge that, or sorry, I shouldn't say we all. I feel as though if you think about it enough, I think we could probably all agree there is something very, very sacred and mysterious about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And even our culture, like we know that, like, so for instance, rape is a massive, massive deal in our culture, as it should be. It's huge,
absolutely.
Right? And you're talking about this. At the same time, we have, like, you have almost the opposite message sometimes where it's just recreational, and people, you know, TV shows, whatever, like, you know, and it's just very like, oh, it's just, you know, it's just sex, you know, it's just sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but that, those two things actually don't work very well together, those
they
two
don't.
Ideas, right? It's
That's
like,
right.
no, we understand actually if we're pressed, I think we would, most of us at least would understand, no, there's something very, very, yeah, sacred and mysterious, and
yes.
we're trying to figure it out. So it's kind of hard to, like, because as I was actually about to say, like, sometimes, and again, I know young people that are Christians that have chosen to, let's say, to wait until they're married to have sex, you know, on one hand, it's like, well, it's awesome, that's great. But it's also like sometimes you can elevate it to almost too big of a thing, right? Where it's suddenly like, hey, so
right.
just, you know, like, you're going to find out within, you know, within a couple months,
yes,
there's just a whole lot more to marriage.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that sex is not this incredible, very, again, sacred, mysterious thing that is, it's one of those things that we don't fully understand. We probably won't fully understand until we're in eternity. But you know what I mean? It's just kind of an interesting topic that is hard to, I don't know. Anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, no,
yeah.
totally.
That's all. That's all I want to say.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting. I actually read that Tom Cruise, when he was married to Nicole Kidman, they had some kids together.
And what were the names of their kids?
I don't know.
It's not Moses and Apple. No, that's Chris Martin.
No, that is Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris. Not. Do you say Chris Marr?
Chris Martin.
Oh, I thought you said Chris Marr. I'm like, we know Chris Marr. It's not Chris Marr. Chris Marr. Okay. Definitely cutting some of this out. Okay. All right.
Okay. There was an article that I had to laugh at.
Okay.
In my prep.
Yes. We need a little bit of a lighter. That's good. Let's go for it. Tell me.
This is old man Corey.
Yeah.
Where am I?
Okay. Sherry.
So in this title is of this article in Vice magazine.
Okay,
so it's an article by Nick Levine in Vice on March 8th. So just this past March.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And it's entitled Radical Monogamy.
Hmm.
Okay. So I had to laugh at this article.
Okay.
So there's this. So I'm going to read from the article. It says this. There's a new type of relationship style in town. One of radical monogamy's most prominent advocates is Boston-based Robin Oakes, an educator, speaker, and grassroots activist who edits this magazine. Okay, so Robin Oakes is going to describe what radical monogamy is.
Hmm.
So here's the deal. She started questioning what she calls reflexive monogamy, which is just the blind assumption that she says we're all kind of given from birth, right? Of traditional monogamy. Like you're supposed to just get, you know, get married to one person the rest of your life. She calls that reflexive monogamy. But she's going to propose radical monogamy. Okay, anyway. So this is the article.
Okay.
She said, after she had broken down this presumption enough to realize that monogamy is not categorically superior to polyamory, Oakes tried to shut out the cultural noise around what type of relationship I should want and ask myself instead, what do I want? In other words, monogamy can be a choice you arrive at after considering your own agency and options rather than a blind expectation. It's a progressive alternative to the old monogamy of our parents and grandparents that doesn't really work today. The latter doesn't work, they believe, because it's often predicated on heteronormativity and misogyny and very frequently breeds boredom, disloyalty, and stagnation. Radical monogamy works for me because I've always wanted a gigantic love. I wanted to be one person's joy and delight, and I wanted them to be mine. Then I grew up, and I was told that was ridiculous, unrealistic, and unhealthy. So I gave up on monogamy and practiced polyamory. But now I've come around to believing that all those other people's messages were wrong. If approached with intentionality, effort, and a willingness to grow, it's possible to have a love that's big and magical. So I literally laughed out loud because I was like, radical monogamy. The only difference between this kind of monogamy and the old kind was that they're deciding that it's a good idea rather than that it was given to them or her or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just started laughing because she says like she tried polyamory, which is multiple loves, so multiple partners.
Yep.
She's like, oh, that's not great. I want a big, what does she say? A gigantic love. Mm-hmm. I always wanted a gigantic love. I always wanted to be one person's joy and delight, and I wanted them to be mine.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah.
Welcome to the Bible.
I know exactly.
I was like, when I read that, I was like, that sounds like Christopher Columbus, who's like, I discovered India. Right?
Totally.
It's like, well, it's called, you know, it's not called the Americas, but it's the Americas. And there've been people living here for quite some time.
Mm-hmm,
like,
totally,
who've been enjoying the land here. And it also reminded me of a story, like when I took my youth kids to a conference, like when I was the youth pastor here.
Hmm.
Oh, at CMS. You went there.
Yeah, I went there.
Yeah, you led your worship teams. Yeah. Oh, because I took the youth band.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yes.
So it was this music conference, and then in the pews, they had little holes for communion cups.
Oh, yeah, right.
And my youth kids were like, this is so cool. Who thought of this?
Who thought of this? Yeah.
And I'm like, something old has become,
yep.
really new. So I was like, okay, radical monogamy. Anyway, I just thought that
funny?
Was
I know.
Funny.
It's almost like, I will do this, but not because you told me to.
Exactly.
Just because I've chosen to. And so, you know, which are like, hey, okay, great. That's awesome.
Cool.
I saw there's another, and I didn't actually read this article. I think was it New York Times or Wall Street Journal? I don't know what it was, but it came up on my socials. But like, it was basically saying like, living, what did they say about, it was basically, again, another thing that really coincides with what, you know, with Christianity's teaching on sex. Like basically saying like, if you, couples that don't live together before they're married will probably have a more successful marriage or something. I forget what it was. It was something, and it was a secular study, and it had some stats in there, and just saying like it's actually better, apparently statistically speaking, for your marriage as far as it lasting longevity, if you don't try it out first in terms of just living together ahead of time. I didn't read the article, but I was like, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Again, I feel as though it's interesting how the Bible and what we believe as Christians does tend to. It seems to be often that science or studies will actually go ahead and prove that actually this matches reality, a lot of these things. So
totally.
That's funny. Yeah, I love that. It's hilarious.
Okay. Finally, final thought. I really love C.S. Lewis's argument in Mere Christianity.
Hmm.
And this came up in the Glenn Scrivener book, and then a friend of mine reminded me of it. He said this. He talks about crooked and straight lines. And Lewis was wondering how he understood what was right and wrong. How would he come to know what was right and wrong? And he said this, he said, quote, my argument against God was that the universe seems so cruel and unjust, but how had I got this idea of just and unjust? A man does not call a line crooked unless he has some idea of a straight line. What was I comparing this universe with when I called it unjust?
Right.
So he said, so where did I get that idea that there was a straight line? Who told me what straight was?
Right.
And what I love about Jesus' ethics is it feels like it's a straight line for us.
Right.
And yeah. Now in a post-Christian world where we're kind of trying to abandon Jesus a little bit.
Yeah.
I know that's a cynical way of saying it, but it just feels like I'm trying to say like, I hope that people begin to rediscover like this radical monogamy here,
right.
Rediscover the beauty of Jesus and realize, oh, he gave us a beautiful line.
Right.
By which I judge all other lines.
Yes. Yeah.
And I now see that's crooked because I know what straight is.
Yeah. Right. 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 Yeah. Totally. I love that. I mean, again, that was sort of weird. We had talked a little bit in our first podcast in this series, I think, about that idea of trying to figure out, so does this automatically come from Jesus's teachings as a man? Or again, how much of this is the image of God within us, right? This mm-hmm. idea that, and again, C.S. Lewis begins Mere Christianity, which is where this is from as well, like that idea that we do have this curious idea that there is a standard of right and wrong.
Yes.
And then secondly, that we all tend to screw up. We tend to actually, even though we know what's right, we tend to not do it often.
Yes. I feel like the most helpful way, maybe I said this 2 weeks ago, I can't remember, but like it does feel like when we're born, or like when or the dawn of humanity, right? Like I'm sure that there are godlike qualities because we're made in the image of God, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
It's like that image bearing piece is there. So even if you find someone in the middle of a jungle that has never had access to anyone else,
mm-hmm.
they're going to have some image bearingness to them.
Right.
But the fall, when sin enters the picture, it distorts it and it puts cracks in it. So I feel like what Jesus does, so I wouldn't want to say someone doesn't have any clue what right and wrong is.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that means I would kind of be going against the image of God
right.
in humanity. But I just want to say, it feels like when Jesus shows up, it just like what was like, you know, kind of black and white, gray, fuzzy, all of a sudden became technicolor and clear and
right. It's almost like putting on a new set of glasses
glasses.
Your eyes are blurry. And well, that's interesting. And again, I think I told you this, and we probably don't have time to go into this, but I did have a lady that came up to me at the end of the service on Sunday, and she had just said she had appreciated, because we used the First Nations version of the Bible, not translation. I think I called it a translation, but I guess it's a paraphrase, right? It's like the message it's a version. So we had used that at the beginning of the service in our prayer time. But she had just said, she was really interested. She said, I feel as though, like, she was thinking back on the first peoples, like the First Nations community, and how, like, she was wondering out loud if it seems as though we don't know a ton necessarily about, I certainly don't know a ton about the history this way, but she said, like, it seemed like it was like the European settlers that came in that actually were the ones that took land away, and they, you know, and actually the First Nations people, in some ways, their hospitality was their downfall in this situation, right? Mm-hmm. They welcomed, and again, she was sort of suggesting that they, from what she understood, and she probably knows more than I do, that the First Peoples were actually known to be people that were hospitable, that actually were good, kind, and no one's perfect, but you know, as far as they weren't necessarily known as barbarians, right? And they would not have any sort of, they wouldn't have the Jesus ethic at all in their understanding, at least. They wouldn't have been taught that, of course. They were, again, first peoples here. So, yeah, it was an interesting, I hadn't really thought of that before. And she said, like, I would love to hear more about that. And I know, again, it's not like we have...
I don't think you and I are the experts on
that. No, I know, not at all. But I was like, oh, yeah. But I like that image of maybe even just saying, maybe it's like, when you know you need glasses and you can see things, you can see the shapes and the colors, but it's not. And then maybe what Jesus does is... we put on a new pair of glasses and suddenly there's clarity and there's new colors and there's, and it's like, you see that straight line. Yeah. I like that.
No, it's a good thought. And you know, I should follow up on what she said. And I think I told you this yesterday, but just some of the things I've heard from First Nations communities or history is that like there was a lot of violence, like, and mm-hmm. so, but I know it's always dangerous on a podcast
to
say things that, obviously, I need to do a lot more research.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember as a kid learning a lot about, like middle school, high school, learning a lot about Aztecs, Incas, Mayans, and just knowing that, like, hey, there's the, that if I do believe that Genesis 3, the fall, impacted the whole world, mm-hmm. then I would expect to find in any culture at any time something true about the image of God, but also something fallen about human sure. nature. And yeah. but that's just a guess and an yeah, assumption. Yeah. So
yeah, totally. No, and it doesn't. Either way, none of these things negate the beauty of what Jesus has brought us yes. in these teachings and in this and kind of flipping things in their head.
Yeah.
Very cool. That's good.
Finally, I just want to say if this conversation in any way has been a triggering thing for someone, or if they feel like they need resources, our Pastor Ben, who does pastoral care, said just people can reach out to him for further resources for counseling. And we have a list of great counselors. We actually just heard of a new one this morning that has done great work with trauma counseling and is here in Langley. And so anyway, if anyone needs those resources, let us know. Reach out to Pastor Ben.
Yep. Ben F, is that right? Ben F at NLCC.ca.
Ben F at NLCC.ca.
Yeah. Ben's awesome. Yeah. Okay.
All right, Corey.
Yeah, this is a good one. Thanks, everyone. We love you. We will see you on Sunday. And Matthew, this was good. Thank you.
This was special. This was very special.